messages flying across the sky. They were an abomination unto Nuggan. The logic sounded impeccable to Polly as she helped Wazza to dig two graves. Prayers from the faithful ascended unto Nuggan, going upwards. A variety of unseen things, such as sanctity and grace, and a list of this week's abominations, descended from Nuggan to the faithful, going downwards. What was forbidden was messages from one human to another going, as it were, sideways. There could be collisions, if you believe in Nuggan, that is, if you believed in prayer. Wazza's real name was Alice, she confided as she dug. But it was hard to apply the name to a small, stick-thin lad with a bad haircut and not much skill with a shovel, who had a habit of standing just slightly too close to you and stared just slightly to the left of your face when she talked to you. Wazza believed in prayer. She believed in everything. That made her kind of awkward to talk to, if you didn't. But Polly felt she should make the effort. "How old are you, Waz?" she said, shoveling dirt.
19, Polly," said Wazza. "Why'd you join?"
"The Duchess told me to," said Wazza.
That was why people didn't talk to Wazza much.
"Wazza, you do know that wearing men's clothes is an abomination, don't you?"
"Thank you for reminding me, Polly," said Wazza, without a trace of irony. "But the Duchess told me that nothing I do will be held abominable in pursuit of my quest."
"A quest, eh?" said Polly, trying to sound jovial. "And what kind of quest is that?"
"I'm to take command of the army," said Wazza.
Hairs rose on the back of Polly's neck.
"Yes," she said.
"Yeah, the Duchess stepped out of her picture when I was asleep, and she told me to go at once to Kinnick," said Wazza. "The little mother spoke to me, Oz. She commanded me. She guides my steps. She led me out of vile slavery. How can that be an abomination?"
"She's got a sword," thought Polly, "and a shovel. This needs careful handling."
"That's nice," she said. And I must tell you that I never in my life have I felt such love and camaraderie," Wazza went on earnestly. "These few days have been the happiest of my life. You have all shown me such kindness, such gentleness. The little mother guides me. She guides us all, Oz. You do believe that too, don't you?"
The moonlight revealed the tracks of tears and the grime on Wazza's cheeks.
Said Polly, and sought wildly for a way to avoid lying. She found it.
You know I want to find Paul," she said.
"Yes, and that does you credit. The Duchess knows," said Wazza quickly.
"Yes, well, yes, I'm also doing it for the Duchess," said Polly, feeling wretched. "I think about the Duchess all the time, I must admit."
Well, that was true. It just wasn't honest.
"I'm so very glad to hear that, Oz, because I had thought you were a backslider," said Wazza. "But you said that with such conviction. Perhaps this would be the time for us to get down on our knees and..."
"Waz, you're standing in another man's grave," said Polly. "There's a time and place, you know. Let's get back to the others, eh?"
The happiest days of her life had been spent tramping through forests, digging graves, and trying to dodge soldiers on both sides. And the trouble with Polly was that she had a mind that asked questions even when she really, really didn't want to know the answers.
"So the Duchess is still talking to you, is she?" she said as they made their way among the dark trees.
"Oh, yes. When we were in plots, sleeping in the barracks," said Wazza, "she said it was all working."
Don't ask another question," said part of Polly's mind, but she ignored it out of sheer, horrible curiosity. Wazza was nice, well, sort of nice in a slightly scary way, but talking to her was like picking at a scab. You knew what was likely to be under the crust, but you picked anyway.
"So what did you used to do back in the world?" she said.
Wazza gave a haunting smile.
"I used to be beaten."
Tea was brewing in a small hollow near the track. Several of the squad were standing guard. No one liked the idea of men in dark clothes sneaking around.
"Mug of saloop,"
said Shufti, holding one up. A few days ago they'd have called it sweet milky tea, but even if they couldn't walk the walk, yet they were determined to talk the talk as soon as possible.
"What's happening?" said Polly.
"Dunno," said Shufti. "Sergeant and Rupert went off over that way with the prisoner, but no one tells us groans anything."
"It's Grunts, I think," said Wazza, taking the tea.
"I've done them a couple of mugs anyway. See what you can find out, eh?"
Polly gulped her tea down, grabbed the mugs and hurried away. On the edge of the hollow, Maledix was lounging against a tree. There was this about vampires. They could never look scruffy. Instead, they were... what was the word? Déshabillé. It meant untidy, but with bags and bags of style. In this case, Maledix's jacket was open, and he'd stuck his packet of cigarettes in the band of his shako. He saluted her with his crossbow as she went past.
"Oz," he said.
"Yes, Corp?"
"Any coffee in their packs?"
"Sorry, Corp, only tea."
"Damn."
Maledict thumped the tree behind him.
"Hey, you went straight for the man who was swallowing the cipher. Straight for him. How come?"
"Just luck," said Polly.
"You're right. Try again. I have very good night vision."
"Oh, all right. Well, the one on the left started to run, and the one in the middle was dropping the clax tube and reaching for his sword. But the one on the right thought that putting something into his mouth was more important even than fighting or running away. Satisfied?"
"You worked all that out in a couple of seconds. That was smart."
"Yeah, right. Now, please forget it, okay? I don't want to be noticed. I don't particularly want to be here. I just want to find my brother, okay?"
"Fine. I just thought that you'd like to know someone saw you. And you'd better get that tea to 'em before they try to kill one another."
At least I was someone watching the enemy, Polly thought furiously as she walked away. I wasn't someone watching another soldier. Who does he think he is? Or she is? She heard the raised voices as she pushed through a thicket.
"You can't torture an unarmed man."
That was Blouse's voice.
"Well, I'm not waiting for him to arm himself, sir. He knows stuff, and he's a spy."
"Don't you dare kick him in the ribs again. That is an order, Sergeant."
"Asking nicely didn't work, did it, sir? Pretty please with sprinkles on top is not a recognised method of interrogation. You shouldn't be here, sir. You should say, 'Sergeant, find out what you can from the prisoner,' and then go somewhere and wait until I tell you what I got out of him, sir."
"You did it again."
"What? What?"
"You kicked him again."
"No, I didn't."
"Sergeant, I gave you an order."
"And?"
"Tease up," said Polly cheerfully.
Both men turned. Their expression changed. If they had been birds, their feathers would have gently settled back.
"Ah, Perks," said Blouse. "Well done."
"Yeah, good lad," said Sergeant Jackram.
Polly's presence seemed to lower the temperature. The two men drank their tea and eyed one another warily. "You'll have noticed, Sergeant, that the men were wearing the dark green uniform of the 1st Battalion of the Slovenian 59th Bowmen, a skirmishing battalion," said Blouse, with cold politeness. "That is not the uniform of a spy, Sergeant."
"Yes, sir, but they'd let the uniforms get very dirty then. No shine on the buttons, sir."
"Patrolling behind enemy lines is not spying, Sergeant. You must have done it in your time."
"More times than you could count, sir," said Jackram. "And I knew full well that if I got caught, I was due a good kicking in the nadgers. But skirmishers is the worst, sir. You think you're safe in the lines. Next moment it turns out that some bastard, sitting in the bushes on a hill, has been working out windage and yardage, and has dropped an arrow right through your mate's head."
He picked up a strange-looking longbow.
"See these things they've got? Burly and strong in the arm, number 5 recurved, made in bloody Ankh-Morpork. A real killing weapon. I say we give him a choice, sir. He can tell us what he knows, and go out easy, or keep mum and go out hard."
"No, Sergeant, he is an enemy officer taken in battle and entitled to fair treatment."
"No, sir. He's a sergeant, and they don't deserve no respect at all, sir. I should know. They're cunning and artful, if they're any good. And I wouldn't mind if he was an officer, sir, but sergeants are clever."
There was a grunt from the bound prisoner.
"Loosen his gag, Perks," said Blouse.
Instinctively, even if the instinct was only a couple of days old, Polly glanced at Jackram. The sergeant shrugged. She pulled the rag down.
"I'll talk," said the prisoner, spitting out cotton fluff, "but not to that tub of lard. I'll talk to the officer. You keep that man away from me."
"You're in no position to negotiate, soldier boy," snarled Jackram. "Sergeant," said the lieutenant, "I'm sure you have things to see to. Please do so. Send a couple of men back here. He can't do anything against the four of us."
"But..."
"That was another order, Sergeant," said Blouse. He turned to the prisoner as Jackram stumped off. "What is your name, man?"
"Sergeant Tarring, Lieutenant. And if you are a sensible man, you'll release me and surrender."
"Surrender?" said Blouse, as Igorina and Wazza ran into the clearing, armed and bewildered.
"Yep. I'll put in a good word for you when the boys catch up with us. You don't want to know how many men are looking for you. Could I have a drink, please?"
"What? Oh, yes, of course," said Blouse, as if caught out in a display of bad manners. "Perks, fetch some tea for the sergeant. Why are people looking for us, pray?"
Towering gave him a cockeyed grin.
"You don't know?"
"No," said Blouse coldly.
"You really don't know?"
Now Towering was laughing. He was far too relaxed for a bound man, and Blouse sounded far too much like a nice but worried man trying to appear firm and determined. To Polly, it was like watching a child bluffing in poker against a man called Doc.
"I don't wish to play games, man. Out with it," he said.
"Everyone knows about you, Lieutenant. You're a monstrous regiment, you are," he said. "No offence meant, of course. They say you've got a troll and a vampire and an Igor and a werewolf. They say you," he began to chuckle, "they say you overpowered Prince Heinrich on his guard and stole his boots and made him hop away and so altogether."
In a thicket some way off, a nightingale sang, for quite a while uninterrupted. Then Blouse said,
"Ha! No, you are in fact wrong. The man was Captain Horrence."
"Yeah, right. Like he'd tell you who he was you pointing swords at him," said Towering. "I heard from one of my mates that one of you kicked him in the meat and two veg, but I haven't seen the picture yet."
"Someone took a picture of him getting kicked," squeaked Polly, drenched in a sudden horror.
"Not of that, no. But there's copies all over the place of him in chains, and I hear it's been sent by the Clacks to Ankh-Morpork."
Is he annoyed?"
Polly quavered, cursing Otto Creek and his picture-making.
"Well, now, let me see," said Towering sarcastically. "Annoyed? No, I shouldn't think he's annoyed. Livid is the word, I think. Or raging? Yeah, I think raging is the word. There's a lot of people looking for you lads now. Well done."
Even Blouse could see Polly's distress.
Perks," he said. "It was you, wasn't it, who,
Over and over in Polly's head the words, "Oh, God, I kicked the prince in the fruit and veg," were going around and around like a hamster in a runaway treadmill, until suddenly it ran up against something solid.
"Yes, sir," she snapped. "He was forcing himself upon a young woman, sir, if you recall."
Blouse's frown faded and became a grin of childlike duplicity.
"Ah, yes, indeed. He was pressing his suit in no small way, was he not?" "He didn't have ironing in mind, sir," said Polly fervently.
Towering looked up at Wazza, grimly clutching a crossbow that Polly knew for a fact she was scared of, and Igorina, who'd much rather be holding a surgeon's knife than the sabre in her hand. Polly saw his brief smile.
"And there you have it, Sergeant Towering," said the lieutenant, turning to the prisoner. "Of course, we all know there is some atrocious behaviour in times of war, but it is not the sort of thing we would expect of a royal prince."
Lieutenant Blouse read only the more technical history books.
"If we are to be pursued because a gallant young soldier prevented matters from becoming even more disgusting, then so be it."
"Now I am impressed," said Towering. "A real knight errant, eh? He's a credit to you, Lieutenant. Any chance of that tea?"
Blouse's skinny chest visibly swelled at the compliment.
"Yes, Perks, the tea, if you would be so good."
"Leaving the three of you with this man who's positively radiating an intention to escape," Polly thought.
"Could perhaps Private Goom go and fetch," she began. "A word in private, Perks," snapped Blouse.
He drew her closer, but Polly kept her eye on Sergeant Towering. He might be bound hand and foot, but she wouldn't have trusted a man who grinned like that if he'd been nailed to the ceiling.
"Perks, you are making a great contribution, but I really will not have my orders continually questioned," said Blouse. "You are my batman, after all. I think I run a happy ship here, but I will be obeyed. Please?"
It was like being savaged by a goldfish, but she had to admit he had a point.
Sorry, sir, said Polly, backing away as long as possible so as not to miss the end of the tragedy. Then she turned and ran.
Jackram was sitting by the fire with the prisoner's bow across his huge knees and slicing some sort of black sausage with a big clasp knife. He was chewing.
Where's the rest of us, sir? Said Polly, scrabbling for a mug.
I sent them to scout a wide perimeter, Perks. Can't be too careful if matey boys got pals out there.
Which was perfectly sensible. It just happened to mean that half the squad had been sent away.
Sarge, you know that captain back at the barracks? That was...
I've got good hearing, Perks. Kicked him in the royal prerogative, eh? Ha! Make it all more interesting, eh?
It's going to go wrong, Sarge, I just know it, said Polly, dragging the kettle off the hob and spilling half the water as she topped up the teapot.
Do you chew at all, Perks? Said Jackram.
What, Sarge? Said Polly distractedly.
The sergeant held out a small piece of sticky, black... stuff.
Tobacco. Chewing tobacco, said Jackram. I favour Black Heart to Jolly Sailor, 'cause it's rum-dipped. But others say...
Sarge, that man's going to escape, Sarge. I know he is. The lieutenant isn't in charge. He is. He's all friendly and everything, but I can tell by his eyes, Sarge.
I'm sure Lieutenant Blouse knows what he's doing, Perks, he said primly. You're not telling me a bound man can overcome four of you, are you?
Oh, sugar, said Polly.
Just down there in the old black tin, said Jackram.
Polly tipped some into the worst cup of tea ever made by a serving soldier and ran back to the clearing. Amazingly, the man was still in a sitting position, and still bound hand and foot. Her fellow cheesemongers were watching him warily. Polly relaxed, but only a little.
"And there you have it, Lieutenant," he was saying. "No disgrace in calling it quits, eh? He'll hunt you down soon enough, 'cause it's personal now. But if you were to come along with me, I'd do my best to see it goes easy with you. You don't want to get caught by the heavy dragoons right now. They ain't got much of a sense of humour.
Tease up, said Polly.
Oh, thank you, Perks, said Blouse dejectedly. I think we can at least cut Sergeant Towering's hands free, don't you?
Yes, sir, said Polly, meaning no, sir.
The man offered his bound wrists, and Polly reached out gingerly with her knife while holding the mug like a weapon.
Artful lad you've got there, Lieutenant, said Towering. He reckons I'm going to grab his knife off of him. Good lad.
Polly sliced the rope, brought her knife hand back quickly, and then carefully proffered the mug.
"And he's made the tea lukewarm so's it won't hurt when I splashes it in his face,"
Towering went on. He gave Polly the steady, honest gaze of the born bastard. Polly held it, lie for lie.
"Oh, yeah, the Ankh-Morpork people have got a little printing press on a cart over on the other side of the river,"
said Towering, still watching Polly.
For morale, they say. And they sent the picture back to the city, too, on the clacks. Don't ask me how. Oh, yeah, a good picture. Plucky rookies, Trans-Slovenia's finest, they wrote. Funny thing, but it looks like the writer man didn't spot it was the prince. But we all did.
His voice became even more friendly.
Now look, mates, as a foot soldier like yourselves, I'm all for seeing the bloody donkey boys made to look fools. So you come along with me, and I'll see to it that at least you don't sleep in chains tomorrow. That's my best offer.
He took a sip of tea and added,
It's a better one than most of the 10th got, I'll tell you. I heard your regiment got wiped out.
Polly's expression didn't change, but she felt herself curl up into a tiny ball behind it. Look at the eyes. Look at the eyes. Liar. Liar.
Wiped out, said Blouse.
Towering dropped his mug of tea. He smacked the crossbow out of Wazza's grip with his left hand, grabbed the sabre from Igorino with his right hand, and brought the curved blade down on the rope between his legs. It happened fast, before any of them could quite focus on the change in the situation. And then the sergeant was on his feet, slapping Blouse across the face and grabbing him in an armlock.
"And you are right, kiddo," he said to Polly over Blouse's shoulder. "Crying shame you ain't an officer, eh?"
The last of the fallen tea dribbled into the soil. Polly reached slowly for her crossbow.
"Don't! One step, one move from any of you, and I'll cut him," said the sergeant. "Won't be the first officer I've killed, believe me." The difference between them and me is, I don't care.
Five heads turned. There was Jackram, outlined against the distant firelight. He had the man's own bow drawn taut and aimed directly at the sergeant in complete disregard of the fact that the lieutenant's head was in the way. Blouse closed his eyes.
You'd shoot your own officer, said Towering. Yup. Won't be the first officer I've killed neither, said Jackram. You ain't going nowhere, friend, except down. Easy or hard, I don't care.
The bow creaked.
You're just bluffing, mister. Upon my oath, I am not a bluffing man. I don't think we was ever introduced, by the way. Jackram's the name.
The change in the man was a whole body event. He seemed to get smaller, as if every cell had said, Oh, dear, very quietly to itself. He sagged, and Blouse slumped a little.
Can I... Too late, said Jackram.
Polly never forgot the sound the arrow made. Jackram laid the bow aside carefully.
Found out who he was messing with, he said, as if nothing much had happened. Shame, really. Seemed like a decent sort. Any saloop left, Perks?
There was silence, and then a thump as Towering's body finally overbalanced and hit the ground. Very slowly, Lieutenant Blouse raised his hand to his ear, which the arrow had perforated en route to its target, and then looked with strange detachment at the blood on his fingers.
"Oh, sorry about that, sir," said Jackram jovially. "Just saw the one chance, and I thought, well, it's the fleshy part. Get yourself a gold earring, sir, and you'll be the height of fashion. Quite a large gold earring, maybe." "Don't you all believe that stuff about the ins and outs," Jackram went on. "That was just lies. So what we do now is... Can anyone tell me what we do now?"
Bury the body?" hazarded Igorina.
"Yeah, but check his boots. He's got small feet, and these Lobinians have much better boots than us."
"Steal the boots off a dead man, Sarge?" said Wazza, still in shock.
"Easier than getting him off a live one."
Jackram softened his voice a little when he saw their expressions. "Lads, this is war, understand. He was a soldier, they were soldiers, you were soldiers, more or less. No soldier will see grub or good boots go to waste. Bury him decent and say what prayers you can remember, and hope they've gone where there's no fighting." He raised his voice back to the normal bellow.
"Perks, round up the others. Igor, cover the fire. Try to make it look like we were never here. We are moving out in number 10 minutes. Can make a few miles before full daylight. That's right, eh, Lieutenant?"
Blouse was still transfixed, but seemed to wake up now.
"What? Oh, yes, right. Yes, indeed. Yes. Carry on, Sergeant."
The fire gleamed off Jackram's triumphal face. In the red glow, his little dark eyes were like holes in space, his grinning mouth the gateway to a hell, his bulk some monster from the abyss. He let it happen, Polly knew. He obeyed orders. He didn't do anything wrong. But he could have sent Maledict and Jade to help us, instead of Wazza and Igorina, who aren't quick with weapons. He sent the others away. He had the bow ready. He played a game with us as pieces and won.
"Poor old soldier," her father and his friends had sung while frost formed on the window panes. "Poor old soldier, if ever I list for a soldier again, the devil shall be my sergeant."
In the firelight, the grin of Sergeant Jackram was a crescent of blood, his coat the colour of a battlefield sky.
"You are my little lads," he roared, "and I will look after you."
They made more than 6 miles before Jackram called a halt, and already the land was changing. There were more rocks, fewer trees. The Kinnec Valley was rich and fertile, and it was from here that the fertility had been washed. It was a landscape of ravines and thick scrub woodland, with a few small communities scratching a living from the poverty-stricken soil. It was a good place to hide, and in here someone had already hidden. It was a stream-carved gully, but at the end of summer the stream here was just a trickle between the rocks. Jackram must have found it by smell, because you couldn't see it from the track. The ashes of the fire in the small gully were still warm. The sergeant got up awkwardly after inspecting them.
"Some lads like our pals from last night," he said. "Couldn't it just be a hunter, Sarge?" said Maledict. "It could, Corporal, but it ain't," said Jackram. I brought you in here because it looks like a blind gully, and there's water, and there's good vantage points up there and over there, he pointed. And there's a decent overhang to keep the weather off, and it's hard for anyone to creep up on us. Military, in other words. And someone else thought the same as me last night. So while they're out there looking for us, we'll sit snug here, where they've already looked. Get a couple of lads up on guard right now.
Polly drew first watch, atop the small cliff at the edge of the gully. It was a good sight, no doubt about it. A regiment could hide here. No one could get near without being seen, too. And she was pulling her weight like a proper member of the squad, so, with any luck, Blouse would find someone else to shave him before she was off duty. Through a gap in the treetops below, she could see a road of sorts running through the woodland. She kept an eye on it. Eventually, Tonka relieved her with a cup of soup. On the far side of the gully, Wazza was being replaced by Lofty.
"Where are you from, Oz?" said Tonka, while Polly savoured the soup.
There couldn't be any harm in telling.
"Munns," said Polly.
"Really? Someone said you worked in a bar. What was the inn called?"
Ah, there was the harm, right there. But she could hardly lie now.
"The Duchess," she said.
"That big place, very nobby. Did they treat you okay?"
"What? Oh, yes, yes, pretty fair."
"Hit you at all?"
"Eh? No, never," said Polly, nervous of where this was going.
"Work you too hard?"
Polly had to consider this. In truth, she worked harder than both maids, and they at least had an afternoon off every week.
"I was usually the first one up and the last one to go to bed, if that's what you mean," she said.
And, to change the subject quickly, she went on, "What about you? You know Munns?"
"We both lived there, me and Tilda. I mean Lofty," said Tonka.
"Oh, whereabouts?"
"The girls' working school,"
said Tonka, and looked away. And that's the kind of trap small talk can get you in, Polly thought.
"Not a nice place, I think," she said, feeling stupid.
"It was not a nice place, yes, a very nasty place," said Tonka. "Wazza was there, we think. We think it was her. Used to be sent out a lot on work hire."
Polly nodded. Once a girl from the school came and worked as a maid at the Duchess. She'd arrive every morning, scrubbed raw in a clean pinafore, peeling off from a line of very similar girls, led by a teacher, and flanked by a couple of large men with long sticks. She was skinny, polite in a dull, trained sort of way, worked very hard and never talked to anybody. She was gone in 3 months, and Polly never found out why. Tonka stared into Polly's eyes, almost mocking her innocence.
"We think she was the one they used to lock up sometimes in the special room. That's the thing about the school. If you don't toughen up, you go funny in the head."
"I expect you were glad to leave," was all Polly could say.
"The basement window was unlocked," said Tonka. "But I promised Tilda we'd go back one day next summer."
"Oh, so it wasn't that bad then," said Polly, grateful for some relief.
"No, it'll burn better," said Tonka. "Ever run across someone called Father Jupe?"
"Oh, yes," said Polly. And, feeling that something more was expected of her, added,
"He used to come to dinner when my mother..."
"He used to come to dinner. A bit pompous, but he seemed okay."
"Yes," said Tonka. "He was good at seeming."
Once again, there was a dark chasm in the conversation that not even a troll could bridge, and all you could do was draw back from the edge.
"I'd better go and see to the loop... to the Rupert," Polly said, standing up. "Thank you very much for the soup."
She worked her way down through the scree and birch thickets until she emerged by the little stream that ran through the gully. And there, like some awful river god, was Sergeant Jackram. His red coat, a tent for lesser men, was draped carefully over a bush. He himself was sitting on a rock with his shirt off and his huge suspenders dangling, so that only a yellowing woolen undershirt saved the world from a sight of the man's bare chest. For some reason, though, he'd kept his shako on. His shaving kit, with a razor like a small machete and a shaving brush you could use to hang wallpaper, was on the rock beside him. Jackram was bathing his feet in the stream. He glanced up when Polly approached and nodded amiably.
"Morning, Perks," he said. "Don't rush. Never rush for Rupert's. Sit down for a spell, get your boots off. Let your feet feel the fresh air. Look after your feet, and your feet will look after you."
He pulled out his big clasp knife and the rope of chewing tobacco.
"Sure you won't join me?"
"No, thanks, Sarge."
Polly sat down on a rock on the opposite side of the stream, which was only a few feet wide, and started to tug at her boots. She felt as though she'd been given an order. Besides, right now she felt she needed the shock of clean, cold water.
"Good lad, filthy habit, worse than the smokes," said Jackram, carving off a lump. "Got started on it when I was but a lad. Better than striking a light at night, see? Don't want to give away your position. Course, you've got to gob a bundle every so often, but gobbing in the dark don't show up."
Polly dabbled her feet. The icy water did indeed feel refreshing. It seemed to jolt her alive. In the trees around the gully, birds sang.
"Say it, Perks," said Jackram after a while.
"Say what, Sarge?"
"Oh, bleeding hell, Perks, it's a nice day. Don't muck me around. I seen the way you've been looking at me."
"All right, Sarge. You murdered that man last night."
"Really? Prove it," said Jackram calmly.
"Well, I can't, can I? But you set it up. You even sent Igor and Wazza to guard him. They're not good with weapons."
"How good would they have to be, do you think? Four of you against a man tied up," said Jackram. "Nah, that sergeant was dead the moment we got him and he knew it. It took a bloody genius like your Rupert to make him think he's got a chance. We're out in the woods, lad. What was Blouse going to do with him? Who'd we hand him over to? Would the lieutenant cart him around with us? Or tie him to a tree and leave him to kick wolves away until he gets too tired? Much more gentlemanly than giving him a quiet cigarette and a swift chop where you go quick, which is what he was expecting and what I'd have given him."
Jackram popped the tobacco into his mouth.
"You know what most of the military training is, Perks," he went on. "All that yelling from little spitbubs like Strappy. It's to turn you into a man who will, on a word of command, stick his blade into some poor sod just like him who happens to be wearing the wrong uniform. He's like you, you're like him. He doesn't really want to kill you, you don't really want to kill him. But if you don't kill him first, he'll kill you. That's the start and finish of it. It don't come easy without training. Rupert's don't get that training because they are gentlemen. Well, upon my oath, I am no gentleman, and I'll kill when I have to. And I said I'd keep you safe, and no damn Rupert's going to stop me. He gave me my discharge papers," Jackram added, radiating indignance. "Me, and expected me to thank him. Every other Rupert I've served under has had the sense to write 'not posted here' or 'on extended patrol' or something, and shove it back in the mail, but not him."
"What was it you said to Corporal Strappy that made him run away?" said Polly before she could stop herself. Jackram looked at her for a while with no expression in his eyes. Then he gave a strange little chuckle.
"Now, why would a little lad like you say a little thing like that?" he said.
"Because he just vanished, and suddenly some old rule means you're back on the strength, Sarge," said Polly. "That's why he said that little thing."
"Ha! And there's no such rule either, not like that one," said Jackram, splashing his feet. "But Rupert's never read the Book of Rules unless they're trying to find a reason to hang you, so I was safe there. Strappy was scared shitless, you know that."
"Yes, but he could have slipped away later on," said Polly. "He wasn't stupid. Rushing off into the night. He must have had something real close to run from, right?"
"Oh, that's an evil brain you have there, Perks," said Jackram happily.
Once again, Polly had the definite feeling that Jackram was enjoying this, just as he'd seemed pleased when she'd argued about the uniform. He wasn't a bully like Strappy. He treated Igorina and Wazza with something approaching fatherly concern, but with Polly and Maledict and Tonka, he pushed all the time, wanting you to push back. "It does the job, Sarge," she said.
"I just had a little tete-a-tete with him, as it were, quiet-like. Explained all the nasty things that can happen vis-a-vis the confusion of war."
"Like being found with his throat cut," said Polly.
"Has been known to happen," said Jackram innocently. "You know, lad, you're going to make a damn good sergeant one day. Any fool can use his eyes and ears, but you uses that brain to connect him up."
"I'm not going to be a sergeant. I'm going to get the job done and go home," said Polly vehemently.
"Yes, I said that once too," grinned Jackram. "Perks, I don't need no clacky thing. I don't need newsy paper. Sergeant Jackram knows what's going on. He talks to them men coming back, the ones that won't talk to anyone else. I know more than the Rupert, for all that he gets his little letters from HQ that worry him so much. Everyone talks to Sergeant Jackram. And in his big fat head, Sergeant Jackram puts it all together. Sergeant Jackram knows what's going on."
"And what's that, Sarge?" said Polly innocently. Jackram didn't reply immediately. Instead, he reached down with a grunt and rubbed one of his feet. The corroded shilling on a string, which had lain innocently on a woollen undershirt, swung forward. But there was something else. For a moment, something golden slipped out of the undershirt's open neck. Something oval and golden, on a golden chain, flashed in the sunlight. Then he straightened up, and it was dragged back out of sight.
"This is a bloody odd war, lad," he said. "It's true there's not just Slovenian soldiers out there. Lads say there is uniforms they'd never seen before. We've kicked a lot of backsides over the years, so maybe they really have ganged up, and it's going to be our turn. But what I reckon is they're stuck. They took the keep. Oh, yes, I know. But they've got to hold on to it. And winter's coming home, and all those lads from Ankh, Morpork, and everywhere are a long way from home. We might have a chance yet. Ha! Especially now the prince is dead set on finding the young soldier that need him in the wedding tackle. That means he's angry. He'll make mistakes.
Well, Sarge, I think...
I'm glad you do, Private Perks, said Jackram, suddenly becoming a sergeant again. And I think that after you've seen to the Rupert and had a nap, you and me is going to show the lads some swordsmanship. Whatever bleeding war this is, sooner or later young Wazir is going to have to use that blade he waggles about. Get going.